This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A federal judge in San Francisco has temporarily blocked the Trump administration's plan to end DACA and ordered the government to start accepting renewal applications once again. Judge William Alsup said ending the program was based on a flawed legal premise and creates undue hardship for dreamers. The Justice Department says they'll continue to press their case, which could mean going to the Supreme Court to have the order lifted. The political and legal stakes here are very high, especially for the hundreds of thousands of DACA recipients whose fate hangs in the balance. We spoke earlier with California Attorney General Javier Becerra, and along with other attorneys general, he sued the Trump administration over ending DACA. Joining me now here in studio is Fareeha Jabvilla-Romero. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Frida is a reporter with KQED News, and you've been talking to a lot of the dreamers. Give us a sense. I mean, this is only temporary. So what are they saying? What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, so I spoke with a couple of people this morning as they were getting the news of the decision by Judge Alsup last night. And what I'm hearing is a lot of cautious optimism. I spoke with, for example, with a 23-year-old called Roberto Nunez, and he graduated from UC Berkeley in 2016. He's working at a communications firm in San Francisco. And what he was saying is that if the Trump administration is going to be accepting application as renew this permit to work legally and be protected from deportation, that could, you know, really benefit hundreds or maybe thousands of people who might be able to apply and get that 2-year, you know, period to be able to work and stay in the country legally. So he won't be able to benefit from that, but his permit is expiring in November this year. So it's very, you know, in, on his mind for sure.
And are you also hearing a lot of anxiety still about, you know, what's eventually going to happen? Or
yeah, what I'm hearing are people are still continuing to prepare for the worst. For example, another DACA recipient, her name is Janet Medina, and she works at Bank of the West and corporate. So, you know, she has a mind attuned to financial stuff. And so she's been saving and preparing and trying to figure out whether, you know, she'll be able to stay in the country and so forth. And what she told me is that, you know, she's hopeful that this is a sign that there might be, you know, a more permanent solution coming up. But she's not holding her breath, basically.
That feeling of being in limbo, though, for so many.
Yes, I think that's right. I think they're, you know, welcoming this development. They say they might, you know, they're even surprised by it a little bit. And they're hopeful, but they still feel like, you know, a permanent solution is needed.
And again, Frida Jabvilla-Romero is with KQED News. And let me tell you who else is joining us for this segment. We want to welcome Deep Gulase Karum, who is professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law, where he focuses on constitutional and immigration law. He's also co-author of The New Immigration Federalism. And welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
We also have Mickey Kaus with us online. He's a journalist and immigration activist, author of The End of Equality, and writes at KausFiles.com. Welcome, Mickey Kaus.
Thank you.
Let me begin with the professor. Professor Gulase Karum, the Trump administration is essentially, once again, excoriating the judiciary on this and saying that there's really no legal validity to it. What is the legal validity?
Well, if the Trump administration is interested in excoriating anyone, it perhaps should look to Congress's past statutes, because that's exactly what this judge's order is based on. And fundamentally, the legal basis here is that Congress, in a series of statutes, along with past practice of many presidents, has allowed practices such as deferred action and the granting of employment authorization for quite some time. And the order here is very explicit on that long history of statutory authorization for things like DACA. And it's on that basis that the court ruled here that that this was based on, the rescission was based on a flawed legal premise.
That there was no reasoned explanation for the termination? Basically?
Well, that the reason given was that DACA was not statutorily authorized,
right,
and was beyond the authority of the Department of Homeland Security to institute in the first place. That was the only reason given at the time of the rescission. It was not done for policy reasons. There was no other reasons given other than that legal reasoning. And therefore, the judge here evaluated that legal reasoning and decided that in this case, that was simply wrong. It was a mistake of law.
And what about the argument going back to the initial executive order from President Obama?
Right, sure. So this gets to a very hard question, because one could say that in the initial creation of DACA itself, there was certainly some legal uncertainty surrounding it. But again, even at that time, the Office of Legal Counsel issued a legal justification for the creation of DACA, which again went to a very long statutory history of authorizing this sort of action by the president.
Well, let me hear from Mickey Kaus, who again is the author of The End of Equality. And you've been pretty critical about the whole way the Dreamers argument has been presented, and I want to hear you on that score. But what about this decision, Mickey Kaus?
Well, I don't think the decision will stand in the Supreme Court. I mean, Obama himself said initially he didn't have the authority to do it. Then he changed his mind, and the Office of Legal Counsel did issue a very tortured, closely head of a pin argued decision saying it was okay. But President Trump made the opposite decision, and so there's sort of a ratchet here. You can decide one way, but then if you have an election and you change your mind, you can't. The president doesn't have authority to undo what Obama did his last, few years in his first term. That doesn't seem very democratic, and I don't think it will stand. But it also has the perverse effect of pulling the rug out from under the Democrats in the current negotiations to, formally pass DACA as a form of legislation, because the Democrats are saying this is so urgent, people are going to lose their DACA protection, we have to act now. And now it's not so urgent because the judge has said they're still protected. So it might have strange results in Washington.
Well, there have been some strange results recently. I mean, the televised meeting between, it was crossing partisan lines, presumably, between Democrats and Republicans, actually chaired by President Trump, perhaps to show to some degree where he can be a leader, as opposed to all these questions that have come up in the Michael Wolff book about his cognitive abilities. According to most on both sides, he acquitted himself very well, but that's not really what's at weight here. What's at weight here is what we're hearing from people like, hate to invoke the name, but Ann Coulter, who says there was like a love fest, and with Bannon gone now, there's going to be a promise to pass a bill of love and maybe take away the whole quid pro quo with the building of the wall. Well, how do you see it?
I thought it was a very strange meeting. The two key mistakes I thought Trump made, he gave away his bargaining power. He said he would sign anything Congress sent him. Well, the Congress will send him a fake bill that has phony border security and genuine amnesty, as it tends to do. He has to ride herd on them. So that's one mistake. And the second mistake is he has this sort of, I have to say, megalomaniacal idea that he can move on from there to a broad amnesty for all 11 million or however many there are million illegal immigrants in the country, a so-called comprehensive reform, which just terrifies people on the right, because we've been down that road before, and the result was the Gang of Eight bill, which was a sort of fraud. It gave amnesty and increased immigration, and most of the enforcement provisions of it were completely chimerical. They were phony.
Forgive me, Mickey Kaus. I just want to ask you, because you used illegal immigrant, and there's a lot of concern about whether that should be used, or undocumented worker. And Devin O'Malley from the Justice Department, I saw in his statement, again, spoke of illegal, not only illegal, he spoke of illegal aliens. Does that trouble you at all, that usage?
It troubles some people. It doesn't trouble me. Illegal alien is the term that's been in the statutes for, decades, if not centuries, and that's sort of the legal term. I'm happy to use undocumented, too. Everybody knows what we're talking about.
Well, what you're talking about is a kind of unfair presentation of the Dreamers, and I'd like to actually quote something that was written about your point of view in the Washington Post. You said, compared with the general population, Dreamers are not especially highly skilled. A recent survey for several pro-Dreamer groups with participants recruited by those groups found that while most Dreamers are not in school, the vast majority work, but their median hourly wage is only $15.34, meaning many are competing with hard-pressed, lower-skilled Americans. So the Dreamers hurt the America First Trumpist idea? Is that what you're saying here?
Well, in general, unskilled workers have gotten a bad shake in the economy, and it doesn't do them any favors to bring in people from outside the country to compete with them. I did say in that piece, the Dreamers are a perfectly decent group of people. They're just not all valedictorians the way they're presented. They do not have to have been brought in the country against their own will. They could have come themselves, and they're not that young. That said, there's a powerful case for giving them some form of amnesty. What restrictionists, if I may use the term, want is they just want something in return to contain the damage. In other words, every time you give an amnesty, you encourage more people to come. So they want to reduce so-called chain migration, and they want some enforcement mechanisms, mainly E-Verify, which they're not going to get, but Trump also wants his wall.
Well, there's a lot at stake here, not only chain migration, but the border safety. I mean, it all came up in yesterday's televised meeting. But, Frieda, let me go back to you. I mean, what do you find from the Dreamers in terms of, there is a kind of representation of them as all being highly educated, working at all sorts of jobs, paying taxes and so forth. Can we give a general picture?
I think there's like a big diversity on, you know, who these more than 700,000 people are. I think a lot of them will tell you that that DACA gave them a sense that more of the American dream was possible and a sense of safety to try to, you know, do more with their lives, go to school get jobs that are more about what they want to do versus the option they had until then, which was, remain in the shadows if they wanted to stay in this country and without the ability to work legally. So I think the vast majority of the people who applied for this permit will tell you that they think it was very positive in their lives and that it was a step towards the American dream for them.
Okay, we're discussing the latest on DACA, and you just heard from Frieda Javela Romero, who's a reporter for KQED News. We also have Deep Gola Sekarum with us, professor of law at Santa Clara University School of Law, and Mickey Kaus, who is the author of a book all about immigration and writes at kausfiles.com. Let me invite you, our listeners, to join the program. In fact, we want to hear your thoughts, and let me encourage you to be free with your thoughts as well as any questions or comments you might have. You can join us now at our toll-free number. Let me give you that number. It's 866-733-6786. And again, please feel free to join the program. Toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. And you can also, of course, join us by tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Here's a comment from Bill, who says the only shred of justification for DACA was an exercise of prosecutorial discretion. The new administration has different priorities, which it is entitled to act on. And let me go to you on this, Professor Gule Sekarum, because we keep on hearing that this is a new administration, it's a new day, so something new is in the works here with DACA.
Sure. I think that's certainly it's a valid argument, and it is actually still in play in this sense. It's not that this ruling suggests that the administration, with its different priorities and different political motivations, couldn't at some point continue to its desire to rescind DACA. It is saying, though, that the process that it went through this time to rescind DACA was fundamentally flawed, and it was fundamentally flawed because the reason that it gave was arbitrary and capricious. This ruling would allow the administration to go back and essentially redo its process and rescind DACA, assuming that it has other reasons for which it wants to rescind DACA. The interesting thing I would point out here is that the president himself seems to have suggested in his tweets and his public statements that he actually thinks at some level the underlying policy for DACA is a good policy.
All right, let me bring our callers in. A lot of people want to weigh in here. We'll get to as many of you as we can. Our first caller is Mickey. Mickey, join us. You're on the air.
Yes, I see this whole situation as a failure of our politicians from either party to come up with a solution to this problem for decades.
Mickey Kaus, how do you respond to that comment? It has fairness from either side, I think, probably, with the immigration difficulties that we have and the nuances of this whole vexing problem.
Well, that's That's obviously true. I mean, we have failed to control the border. People came in, they brought their children, and the children, in many cases, didn't know what was happening, and they find themselves in America, and that's the situation we're in. So that's clearly right. On the other hand, the other point is, we could have solved this problem. It's a clear two-step solution. First, you control the border, and you satisfy people that that's being done, and then you can have an amnesty. Instead, Congress has tried to do it all at once, and the result has been that the border doesn't get controlled, because as soon as the amnesty happens, half of the political system doesn't care anymore.
Well, we're hearing a whole different kind of talk. In fact, again, I can't get over the fact that the president spoke about, evoked the word love a number of times, and you may recall during the campaign he made fun of Jeb Bush for using that same word with respect to immigrants and welcoming them. Does that seem to you to be maybe, as it does to some people on the right, that, and with Steve Bannon gone, that the president politically is maybe moving more toward compromise?
Well, I think that's right. Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, has always been in favor of DACA. And with Bannon gone, his influence is greater and more or less unimpeded. Somebody gave him some public relations advice to be the magnanimous bipartisan figure. And I found that the most annoying part of the meeting yesterday.
You want to weigh in here, Professor Goulet-Sekharam? I mean, the politics is what we're talking about, but certainly the president has suggested maybe a shift yesterday, at least of sorts, and indeed the influence of Kushner and his daughter and, for that matter, Gary Cohen has been commented on by many from the right.
Right. I would just say that even with this ruling today, one of the things that it continues to highlight is that the ultimate solutions here, any lasting solutions here, have to be political solutions that are going to come out of Congress and this president. He might very well be quite torn about it, but fundamentally, in order to have any sort of comprehensive action here, there has to be a solution to the fact that there are 11 million unlawfully present people in the United States who are not going to be deported. That is just a fundamental reality of this situation. And so I don't know what his answer is ultimately going to be, but there has to be a legalization as part of any federal legislative solution here.
Well, let me bring Joseline Gonzalez here. We're talking again about DACA ending, the judge moving to block the order for that. And we still have a March deadline coming up, but that may be a bit flexible at this point. Joseline Gonzalez is a DACA recipient. She works with immigrants at Catholic Charities of the East Bay, and we welcome you to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. So last night I received a notification about the great news, and I was really happy because immediately I texted one of my friends. I'm surrounded by the immigrant community. My friends are immigrants. My clients are immigrants. So I texted her and I told her about the news because her work permit actually expires March 13. So this meant that she could reapply. This meant that my clients who missed the deadline could get a work permit again and contribute to this country. But it's been really frustrating because Trump doesn't understand the contribution that we bring to this country. So it's just a lot of emotions. It feels like a roller coaster. It's frustrating, but I'm really happy that things are moving. And this shows how this is a small victory and that we're not going to let Trump do whatever he wants.
Well, as the Attorney General said, it seems to be a big step forward. You sound almost joyous about it, though. You are.
Hmm? Yeah, I'm happy. I'm glad. But I'm excited, but I'm also really nervous because it takes pressure off Congress, and I'm afraid how Trump and his administration is going to react because clearly they don't like to be challenged, and this it looks uncertain. But I'm glad that this is giving opportunity to people and giving hope. And I already saw on Twitter that Trump's administration has already announced that they disagree with the court's decision. So this shouldn't stop us from pushing for a Clean Dream Act for everybody because people are being deported. Families are being torn apart. So we need to remember that not everybody qualifies for DACA. People are losing their TPS. So it's just I feel like it feels like a game for Trump, but no one should be living in uncertainty.
You keep saying President Trump is wrong, doesn't understand about DACA. What if you were talk to him right now, if you had him on the line here with us, what would you say to him he doesn't get about those recipients of DACA?
First, I will give him I'll give him a lesson about history and let him know how everything started, because I think he doesn't understand how immigration works, the history about immigration. So, and I'll tell him that he needs to change his mind. Like, I don't know what's going I don't know what's going on with him, to be honest.
Okay. Well, let me think. Sorry.
I feel like one of the things we need to continue calling our representatives, advocating for immigrant rights, everybody, regardless of their DACA or not, because everybody contributes to this country, and urge Congress to do something fast, because, like I said, people continue to be deported. We have DACA. I don't know if you talked about this, but a DACA student from UC Berkeley was detained, and he has DACA. So we need to remember that DACA is just temporary. We need to have a Clean Dream Act, because this DACA does not protect. It's just a permit for us to work here legally in the United States. And just one last comment, actions are illegal. People are not illegal.
All right, Joseline Gonzalez, appreciate your participation in the program this morning. She is a DACA recipient who works with immigrants at the Catholic Charities in the East Bay, Catholic Charities of the East Bay. Let me go back to Professor Goulet-Sekarom. Skip says, I think this decision will go to the Supreme Court and be overturned. What's the point? DACA is dead.
Right. So, I mean, there are several possibilities here. One is that the administration, even if they disagree with it, this was just a preliminary injunction motion. They could continue to litigate this at the district court level and see what happens after a full hearing on the underlying merits. They could appeal this immediately to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and ask for a stay of this injunction. That ruling then, from that point, could be appealed to the Supreme Court. But that would take weeks, months, in order to get to that resolution. Of course, in between that time, we would have I don't know if it's illusory, but the March 5th deadline that President Trump set for Congress to do something. So a lot could happen in that time. In thinking about what happens to this at the Supreme Court, I'm not sure I know that it's an open and shut case, or that one can easily figure out what the result's going to be by traditional views of conservative and liberal justices. Fundamentally, this is a question of statutory interpretation. What do the underlying federal laws that have been in place for quite some time, what do they allow the president and the DHS to do and not do with regards to this particular group? And I think that on those questions of statutory interpretation, you might get a variety of surprising answers from Supreme Court justices.
All right, and once again, we're discussing a decision to block the end of DACA. Let me get Mustafa on next. Mustafa, join us. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks so much. One of the questions I had was, it seems like it's up to the Trump administration whether or not they'll continue with rescinding DACA, but I was hoping we could talk a little bit about the economic implications in these communities, the social implications, what these communities are going through, because it seems like we are debating about, whether or not this has any merits legally, but what about the policy implications of it? This is a horrible thing to do humanitarian-wise, health-wise, mental health-wise, and economic-wise. So I'm just looking forward to hearing people talk about.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what you have to say about this, Mickey Kousen. You might want to also gloss for us what you see about the impact of this on Democrats in the budget deal negotiations.
Well, in practice, very few DACA recipients are going to be deported. So we have this fear is greatly, greatly exaggerated. And, anytime you enforce immigration laws, you're going to have some cases that tug at the heartstrings. People come here legally, they plant down roots, but they did come illegally. And if you're going to enforce the law and not encourage other people to come illegally, you sometimes have to take actions that aren't, completely 100% what you would see on an afternoon after school special. And so I don't think the economic, economic argument is that great. I mean, these people will still, will still be in the community. They'll be working at other jobs, maybe. Maybe they'll be working in the underground economy. I do think some resolution of the situation, like President Trump, is warranted, and I think Congress is moving toward that.
All right. Let me go back to you, Farida. There's a sense of listeners bringing up the American dream here. There's a sense that they just want a part of the not only prosperity of the American dream or economic advantages of it, but they want to be part of that period.
Right. I mean, I think the economic argument is often when I'm talking to people who applied for DACA, it is an important thing in their minds. It's the ability to work legally to, make more money than you would probably if you were working as an undocumented, person. And often those earnings go to support their families as well. So I think it is a really important argument, the economic piece of it, and just the ability to get ahead.
About the El Salvador people, refugees who were here on the temporary visa.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, 17% of the El Salvador's economy comes from money going from the United States back to El Salvador.
Yeah, and the same with Mexico. I don't know exactly the percentage of what
remittances
make, but it's a lot of money. I think, it's not just the, close to 800,000 people who we're talking about who have DACA. It's also their families and communities and, people who are connected to them.
Well, it's temporarily blocked, nearly 700,000. What about when the president says,
I was just, in reading the judge's decision from last night, I mean, I think it's really interesting that the plaintiffs that were mentioned are, Janet Napolitano, the regent of the University of California, and the lawsuit that they brought in September, claiming that the university had some real, there was like economic impact to them because they've invested money on the students, the hundreds or thousands of students that they have who are undocumented, giving them scholarships or just on their education, and also the employees they have who have DACA. So I think it's also an economic there's an economic aspect.
Well, the labor unions are also part of this, we should mention, as long as we're talking about economic interests.
I think it's separate lawsuits, but I'm not sure.
And there's also the whole question of the constitutionality, which we haven't even gotten into here, which has been brought up by five of the red states. But let me thank you, Farida Javila Romero, who is a reporter of KQED News, who joined us here in the studio. And thanks also to our other guests, Deep Gulasekarum, who is professor of law at Santa Clara, and Mickey Kaus, a journalist and author, writes at KausFiles.com. Thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.